I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Alexander to inbound. Sellers. Citron on Miller. They flatten it out 1-4. Miller's got it. 5 seconds to go. Miller. The pull up off the cross, and she hits it at the buzzer. Maryland.
How about that last night, basketball fans? Lady Terps on the road in South Bend against the 7th ranked Fighting Irish and Diamond Miller. They go 1-4, they spread it in a tie game. And man, it was very DeMar DeRozan like if you watch the way she got to her spot and just kind of pushed up a little one-handed jump shot that went in at the buzzer, and the Terps upset number 7, Notre Dame, on the road. Brenda Freeze, by the way, one win away from 600 wins as a college basketball coach. Incredible. Program's 26th win over a top 10 opponent since Brenda took over, which is amazing to me. 20 years ago now, 20 years ago, Brenda Freeze became the Maryland women's basketball coach, and they have been a powerhouse pretty much since the time she arrived. Diamond Miller, by the way, 31 points, 12 rebounds, and 5 assists in the game for the Lady Terps. Congrats to them tonight. A big one at Xfinity Center. Cannot wait for Maryland and Illinois, number 22 against number 16 in the Big Ten opener. Denton, I know you're fired up for 2. Terps are a 2-point favorite. I was anxious to see what that line would be. I thought they would be favored. I didn't know by how much. I'm glad I didn't see like Illinois -3. That would have scared me. If I had seen that. But the Terps are a 2-point favorite tonight. You can hear that game right here on your home for Maryland basketball, the team 980. 9 o'clock tip. No excuses, boys and girls. You wanted big-time change. You wanted a fresh shot in the arm. You got it. You're 7-0. You've got the first start in Big Ten history of a coach winning all 7 of his first games, first 7 games by double digits or more. And it's a big-time matchup tonight. It is a, I think it's a gold out tonight. Is that what they call it? A gold out, Denton?
Gold out or gold rush?
Gold rush. Thank you. It would be a white out or a blackout. It's a gold rush tonight. They've done the gold rush against Illinois in the past. In fact, I believe it was just 3 years ago, pretty much to the day. Early December 2019, Big Ten opener, the Terps were ranked 3rd in the country. They were 10-0 against a very good Illinois team, and they rallied from 11 down late. And one of the best players, really, in the history of Maryland basketball, certainly of this century, Anthony Cowan, took the game over.
Ayala killed the dribble. Now Smith for Cowan with 9 to shoot. Cowan for the tie.
Yeah, that was a big-time shot, big-time comeback. Then he got a steal on the other end because that tied the game, hit a couple free throws, and that was a dramatic win. The Terps were number 3 in the country that night 3 years ago on their way to a Big Ten title. And unfortunately, it's amazing by the time we get to March of this upcoming year, it'll be 3 years since the beginning of that pandemic that we've just gone through. And I think we're through. But that was a big time shot. The Terps got to 10-0, third ranked team in the country. You know, I saw Gravis Vasquez, who's one of my all-time favorite Terps, put out a tweet that said Maryland basketball is back. And Jalen Brantley, who was a backup point guard for Mark Turgeon's Terps for a couple of seasons, tweeted out, you know, respectfully, he said, you know, we did win the Big Ten title 3 years ago. We were 20-2 just a few years ago at one point. I think, you know, the truth will do when it comes to a lot of the conversations we have with one another about a lot of different things. But I think a lot of Maryland fans have gotten completely carried away. I'm as excited as any of you. Can't wait for tonight. Love Kevin Willard. Love what he's done here early, and I'm very excited about the future of Maryland basketball, especially with a top 10 recruiting class coming in next year. But some of you all act like they weren't Big Ten champs a few years ago and probably would have made a deep run into the tournament. We're ranked third in the country, and two years before that, we're number two in the country and 20-2. They forget that, you know, it wasn't like we were missing the tournament every year. It was 7 out of 8 years. But I understand it, and I've said it many times. Not enough March success, and yeah, the program had gotten and felt a little stale, for sure. Can't wait for tonight. And we have just done our Maryland basketball segment for the day here at the Open. Wasn't planning on doing it until I saw the highlight of the shot from Diamond Miller against Notre Dame last night on the road. Brenda Freeze, 20 years. Wow. This is her 20th season at Maryland. What a winner, ultimately, in the sport, for sure. All right, on the show today, Big Football Friday, obviously, with a heavyweight matchup on Sunday between the Redskins and the Giants. Excuse me, the Commanders and the Giants. First big-time matchup for the Giants and the Skins in December in a long, long time. And I was thinking about maybe the biggest late-season Giants-Skins game, and I came up with it, and you're going to hear it during my What Do You Got coming up here in about 60 seconds. But we will talk a lot. I've got keys to a win over the Giants. I think it's kind of simple based on the way that Washington's been playing and the way the Giants have been playing, but there are a couple of things that I think that give Washington actually an advantage. I think one of the things the odds makers see and why they have them favored at -2.5 is a certain matchup that I think Washington can take advantage of on Sunday. Sunday, 1 o'clock, there is a good NFL Sunday card with a lot of meaningful games. The first of which was last night, where really the Bills were not threatened really after about the mid or early second quarter on. They beat the Patriots 24-10. Look, the bottom line with New England, they just don't have enough offense. They've got a good defense. They don't have enough offense. I know they put up 26 and nearly 500 yards against the Vikings on Thanksgiving night, but the Vikings are a terrible defensive team. Buffalo is a much better defensive team, and they really shut New England down. Could not move the football other than that first touchdown catch by Marcus Jones. And where did they find him? I mean, it was a little, you know, pass out into the flat, and he turned it up the sideline with incredible speed. But that was it. 7-3 lead. The rest of it was Buffalo all the way. Allen threw for 223, two touchdowns in the game. I would say he had at least four balls flat out dropped, including two by Stephon Diggs, who still had a big night. He was 7 receptions for 92 yards and a touchdown on 9 targets. But I think the other two targets were just drops. One of them was for sure a drop. Buffalo getting healthier on defense now. I still think they're the second best team in football behind Kansas City. You had in your power rankings Denton yesterday, KC 1, and did you have Miami 2?
Yeah, I had the Dolphins at 2.
Well, we're going to find out, you know, coming up on the either the 17th or the 18th, and I think it's going to be the 17th. I think they'll move the Miami-Buffalo game to the 17th. That game, for all intents and purposes, will be for the AFC East. Remember, Miami beat Buffalo earlier in the year. So if they can do it again on the road at Buffalo, they would own the head-to-head with a sweep, and they would be in really good position in the AFC East. That, you know, Miami's got a massive game Sunday against San Francisco, and then, by the way, have to go on the road and face the Chargers. That game, by the way, got flexed earlier this week to Sunday night football. But the Bills and Dolphins headed towards a showdown. I don't want to discount the Jets because I think they're capable if they can generate any offense, and certainly Mike White did last week against not a very good defensive team in Chicago. I think they've got a chance to beat Minnesota Sunday. You may hear that in the smell test coming up later on in the show. But then they've got the Bills as well, and they still have another game with the Dolphins. So not to discount the Jets, because they kind of control their own fate as well within that division with games against the Bills and the Dolphins. Both of those games, though, are on the road, and they also play Minnesota and Seattle on the road. So not an easy closing stretch for the New York Football Jets, but they do have a good shot of making it into a wild card situation. Right now, they're the 7 seed, and I think the battle will be between them and the Chargers for, you know, one of those last, probably that last wild card spot in the AFC. We've talked a lot about, you know, Washington's situation in the NFC. The AFC is really starting to kind of, you know, shake itself out. Kansas City, Tennessee, Baltimore or Cincinnati, Buffalo or Miami as division winners. And then you'll have the AFC East runner-up almost assuredly will have a wild card spot. So will the AFC North, Baltimore, Cincinnati, in pretty good shape to snag a wild card spot. And then you've got teams like the Chargers at 6-5, and man, did they need that win Sunday in Arizona when they went for 2 in the win to get to 6-5, and the Jets. Those two teams will probably battle it out. New England's still in the hunt at 6-6, but man, they can't score. You know, that's their issue. They just can't move the football and score unless they're playing, you know, a team that can't stop anybody. They've got the Cardinals and the Raiders coming up, so chances to get back into it, I guess, but both of those games are on the road. Wouldn't put it past Belichick to figure out how to get to 9 or 10 and be in the hunt, but I think it'll come down to the Chargers and the Jets for that last wild card spot in the AFC. And I think a lot of people would love to see the Chargers, but the Jets are a hell of a story this year. Robert Saleh and that coaching staff have done a great job, and they have, you know, like Washington, like New England, Dallas to a certain degree, they've got one of the best young defenses in the NFL. It is amazing. I know I've talked about this, just the number of Alabama defensive tackles that are dominating. Payne, Allen, Quinnen Williams, there are more. And the Jets are just awesome on defense to watch. And they've got a big one Sunday on the road against Minnesota. Really, really good NFL weekend. I'll get to Washington beats the Giants if we will get to the rest of the NFL card. Smell test picks later on. Logan Thomas will join us this morning. Washington tight end Logan Thomas. You'll hear him at 7 a.m. This morning. But let me, and we're going to do some soccer too. We're going to talk to Craig Hoffman about the U.S. And their prospects tomorrow morning against the Netherlands. Yesterday was surprising, I believe. Germany is out. Belgium, I believe, is out. And that the Germany exit was called by their coach a country catastrophe. So there you go. The importance of this to the rest of the world is amazing. But tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., right? I think it's 9 a.m. East Coast time. You've got the knockout stage beginning with the U.S. and the Netherlands. And I think the rest of the field, with the exception of however it finishes up today in the last games of the group stage, are set. And there's some surprises. You know, I don't know that Japan was supposed to be there. I don't know that Australia was supposed to be there, I think, based on what I was reading. Some of the powerhouses, Germany and Belgium in particular are out. And the favorite by far right now is pretty much Brazil. We'll talk to Hoffman about that coming up in about 10 minutes. He follows soccer. So I'm not going to sit here and break down the U.S.-Netherlands game for you. I don't think Denton is either. Hit the what do you got sounder if you don't mind.
All right, all right, all right.
What do you got?
So I was thinking about kind of the greatest Redskins-Giants games in history. And, you know, they did play, obviously, in the NFC Championship game after the 86 season, January of 87, a 17-0 shutout win by the Giants on their way to the Super Bowl. It was quite a performance over Washington in that championship game. Really dominant. Everybody remembers the wind in the Meadowlands and Joe Morris running wild and, you know, Phil Sims barely even needing to throw the football. I looked up the box score last night of the NFC Championship game that year. Phil Sims was 7 of 14 for 90 yards. 7 of 14 for 90 yards. The Giants had 199 yards of total offense. That was it. But they shut out Washington 17-0 to, by the way, complete a three-game sweep of Washington in that 86 season, and they would go on to crush Denver in the Super Bowl out in Pasadena. I forget what the final score of that Super Bowl was. 39-21, I think it was, in that Super Bowl. But that's the biggest, you know, stage game Washington and New York have ever played. But, man, during the 80s and into the 90s, there were some heavyweight matchups between Washington and New York. When the Giants got good under Bill Parcells, the Giants and the Redskins were the class of the NFC East. Dallas was still good, and then Philadelphia with Buddy Ryan would become good. But the Giants and the Skins were the two teams. You know, obviously during that stretch from 82 to 91, Washington won three Super Bowls and the Giants won two. And, you know, Washington went to four. So during a 10-year stretch, the Giants and or the Redskins were in six Super Bowls. The 49ers and the Bears were in the others. I mean, that was the NFC. The 49ers, the Redskins, the Bears, and the Giants. You know, they were the dominant teams of that era, and it set up a lot of big-time matchups between Washington and New York. But New York had not gotten over and through Washington. They had had a good 1985 season where you could see it coming defensively, and they beat the 49ers in a wild card game, but the Bears were just too much for them. The 85 Bears were just too much, and they shut out the Giants on a windy, cold day at Soldier Field, 21-0. But the Giants had laid kind of the groundwork for a run the following season. And in the 86 season, you had two significant games in the NFC East between the two heavyweights in the NFC East, the Redskins and the Giants. And the first game came on a Monday night, October 27th. It was the night of Game 7 of the World Series between the Mets and the Red Sox. Game 7 was supposed to be the Sunday night, but it got rained out. That was following the Buckner game in Game 6. And they played at Shea Stadium as the Redskins and the Giants were playing the first of their two games on Monday Night Football. And it was a matchup between, at that time, the 5-2 Giants and the 5-2 Skins. And the Giants won that game 27-20 on a late Joe Morris 13-yard touchdown run to win the game 27-20. But later in the season, they faced Washington in Washington at RFK Stadium for the NFC East. Okay, it was the Giants coming in at 11-2. Washington at 11-2, two big time favorites to make it to the Super Bowl. The Giants, with a win, would clinch the division because this was, at that point, you know, their opportunity to get a two-game edge on the Skins and to get a one-game edge, but really a two-game edge by virtue of the sweep. Now, I don't think it would technically clinch it because there were two games left. But this was a massive matchup. And this is how it sounded. This, to me, is the biggest regular season game. And there were a lot of them in the 80s and 90s. Lots of them. But this one, 11-2, 11-2, December 7th, a day that will live in infamy, but not in 1986, between the Redskins and the Giants. This was the CBS open to that game.
Washington Redskins offensive line is one of football's best, but today their reputation will be challenged by Lawrence Taylor and a fired-up New York defense. The Giants are confidently riding the crest of a six-game winning streak. And with the right calls from Phil Sims, they hope to roll a seven today. Also face some stiff challenges today. First, their defense must contain Washington's fleet receivers, like Gary Clark. And their unheralded pass blockers will have to contend with Dexter Manley, one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. Manley relishes the spotlight, and today it shines brightly in the season's biggest game. Joe Morris ran the Giants to victory in their first meeting, but today's rematch is at RFK Stadium, where the Skins are hard to beat and where tickets are impossible to find.
Hair standing up at the back of my neck listening to that. Seriously, for many of you, I know it is the same thing. For some of you, you're like, man, that was a long time ago. Don't really remember that. Don't really care. That's the way it used to be. For a long period of time, the biggest games of the NFL season were played between Washington and New York, Washington and Dallas, Dallas and New York, Philly and Dallas. It's nice to see the NFC East as a division, as a family, back in the position that it is in, with a lot of big games here down the stretch in December and into early January. But that game on December 7th, 1986, that's the biggest regular season game the Giants and the Redskins ever had. And by the way, the Giants smoked the Skins. They were dominant. They won the game 24-14. I mean, Lawrence Taylor was unbelievable. Three sacks in the game. And Jay Schrader, 28-51 with six, count them, six interceptions in the game. Washington turned it over seven times. They lost to the Giants 24-14. Washington would go on, obviously, to make the postseason, and they got a big win over the Rams in a wild card game. Then they went on the road and beat the Bears at Soldier Field to get that third chance at the Giants in the NFC Championship game, which did not work out. 1986, that regular season game at RFK, I would say is the biggest regular season game, and they had a lot of them. I mean, there were a lot to choose from, including the 91 game midseason in the Meadowlands, but that one was massive. All right, up next, we will talk about the U.S.'s chances tomorrow in the knockout stage against the Netherlands with our own Craig Hoffman. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. Tomorrow morning, I've been told.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
10 a.m. Eastern. Perfect setup right into, you know, a championship Saturday in college football. Denton and I are going to talk about all of the matchups tomorrow, and I've got a couple of them in the smell test later on in the show. Yes, from Justin on Twitter, Sheehan, the hair on the back of my neck, straight up listening to Summerall introduce that game in 1986. Yeah, I feel the same way. Those are incredible memories. And 11-2 versus 11-2, and Summerall saying the tickets are impossible to get. Yeah, that's the way it was a long time ago. Craig Hoffman joins us right now because the U.S. takes on the Netherlands tomorrow morning in the knockout stage. And Craig knows about soccer because, well, let me just ask you, before you went to work for the Washington Spirit, were you a big soccer fan?
I would say I was a solid fan. I wasn't someone who was getting up early, watching Premier League on Saturdays, all that kind of stuff. I would watch it sometimes, but definitely a lot more since I went to work there and have left. And I've always had an interest in the game. I played a little bit growing up, but not a ton. I just always found it interesting. Like the world finds this game more fascinating than all of our stuff. Why does everybody else like it? And you watch it enough, and I think you start to understand.
You know, it's interesting that you said that, because one of the reasons personally I've given it a real effort over the last, I would say, 10 years is because of what you just said. I'm interested because of the rest of the world being so interested. And I've spent time in other places during events like the Euro or the World Cup, and I've seen the reaction and been in bars and restaurants when, and it's fascinating to me. The game itself doesn't do it for me as hard as I've tried, but the pageantry of it and the importance of it makes it attractive. And I'll be watching tomorrow morning. And I guess the first question I would ask is, you know, overall, would it have been a disaster had the U.S. not made it out of their group stage to this stage?
I think in the eyes of many, yes. I think if you're trying to be as fair as possible, they missed the last one, which obviously everyone knows at this point, either because they remember or because they've been reminded of it 1,000 times by Fox's coverage. And if you miss the last one and you make this one, you've already made progress. And I think that they've shown well. I think if they came out and were super disappointing, obviously, there would be repercussions. You know, a lot of people still are not happy with the way this team has been coached in this tournament, despite the fact they made it out. It's kind of one of the reasons why soccer, football is so popular around the world is the game is so random in so many ways that a lot of people, like the fans, just get to, like, talk radio is built for a sport like soccer. Because it's such a random game in terms of the outcomes, because of the low scores, et cetera. But directly to the results question of it and whether or not this team has done enough to kind of say, like, yes, they're on the right track. I think so. They are one of the youngest teams in the tournament. And so the fact that they have advanced to this stage, considering the youth, considering their lack of depth in a lot of areas, I do think this has to be deemed a successful World Cup. With that said, they can absolutely win tomorrow. And they've already proven that they are capable of playing with the very best teams in the world, considering how they played against England. So I do think that in some ways their performance has actually raised the stakes a little bit, because I still feel like there's a lot of potential to be unlocked here, and that they could, you know, could, this is always the case in soccer, could explode still and maybe go on a little run here.
Well, the could, you said it at the beginning of your answer. You used the word randomness. And I would ask you, as someone who's really given it a try to really try to understand the, you know, the dog whistle nuance of soccer, it's hard for me sometimes to watch and see another team clearly outclassing or outplaying another team. I mean, the number of shots on goal, I don't want to compare it to hockey, because I think there's a randomness to the hockey postseason as well. I mean, a deflection off a skate, off a post. Is it the same kind of thing in soccer?
Yeah, it is. And it's just by the nature of the fact that it's low scoring. Like, if you have a sport where games can be you know, one nothing with frequency, that means you are one team getting a lucky break, and truly a lucky break. Like, nothing great happened. You know, in hockey, a puck hits a rough spot on the ice and kicks past a goalie that's in otherwise perfect position, and it's just bad luck. And if you get a couple of lucky plays the other way, saves, whatever, that's it. You lose. You were the better team. And that's exactly what soccer is, just on a much wider field and, you know, kick off the skates, yada, yada. So that is the randomness. And it's actually, you know, really interesting, Kevin. I've referenced this a couple times on my show. I am reading this book right now by Ryan O'Hanlon, who's one of ESPN soccer writers, and he has dove into the analytics side of soccer. And it's really not a book about soccer analytics. It's not like I'm reading formulas. I would fall asleep in 30 seconds if that was the case. But he's telling the stories of all the different people who are trying to break into soccer, which is this incredibly, you know, resistant sport to any kind of new thinking, because it is such a long history and is so institutionalized in so many ways. But hearing how some of these people are trying to figure out the game and the struggles they have because of the randomness, it's like the best they can do is this stat right now, or, you know, mostly the best they can do is this stat, expected goals. And it's only got like a 50.
Explain that.
So basically every shot, it depends on which model you're using. But, you know, the most common models are basically shot based, and it's like based off the number of shots taken and where they're taken, and some factor in the traffic in front, some factor in, you know, whether or not you were receiving,
so it's
it
like
off
the,
a pass.
The high probability shots.
Yeah.
Versus,
yeah, exactly.
Low probability shots. Okay.
Yeah. That's a good way. That's a good way to put it. And it's only got like a 50% correlation to whether, like, expected goals to actual goals. And so there's clearly gaps in the data. And if there's that much to learn about the game, we're still learning so much about the strategy and player development and all of these things. So that all contributes to that randomness and trying to figure out, like, hey, what's actually, are we even playing this game the right way? Is there a better way? In the same way that, you know, basketball has gone through the revolution with 3-point shot, football has gone through different revolutions in terms of, hey, let's go to the passing game. But even that, you see the change in the NFL now back to the running game, because all those were influenced by the fact that you used to have 330-pound defensive linemen. Now you don't. So maybe we should run it then with our 330-pound offensive lineman. Like, some of this stuff is just fascinating in terms of the strategy. And I think the more I've learned about it, the more interested I've become.
Interested in this. We're talking to Craig Hoffman. Hoffman 3-6 right here on the Team 980 with his show, and does a really good podcast with Logan Paulson as well. What about the time of possession? Like, isn't that an important statistic? I wouldn't call it an advanced statistic, but is that important? And then where that possession takes place?
Yes. So the last part is actually, from what I've read of this book so far, and I'm most of the way through it, is the more important part. Like, how many touches can you get in the final third of the field, the attacking third, where you obviously score 99% of your goals, save the occasional David Beckham kick one in from midfield. So time of possession, though, can be overrated. There have been many teams that have been successful, and you've even heard some announcers, some commentators reference this in the tournament. Oh, they're letting them have possession, because if you choose to play a counterattacking style, you almost want to lull the other team into a false sense of security. You get to a certain area of the field, or you get them to kind of push the ball to a certain area of the field, trap it, just like in a full court
and
press
then
in
send
basketball.
Somebody out on the fast break.
And then you're going the other way. And in fact, that is probably how the U.S. will play at times on Saturday against the Netherlands, because the Netherlands is a fairly slow team. They're an older team in a lot of ways. And the U.S. has these guys in Pulisic and, you know, Brendan Aaronson when he comes in off the bench, but Weston McKennie and, you know, even Serginho Dest, one of their fullbacks, one of their outside backs. Like, these guys are so fast that if they can get out in space, Tim Weah, obviously one of their forwards, like, these guys get out in space and they can get a numbers advantage and create a good shot, and get that transition play. So, definitely the possession is important. I am a fan of possession on some level, because the one way to guarantee the opponent won't score is to have it. However, if you just keep possession for the sake of having it, it doesn't actually translate to anything. The correlation in terms of percentage, you know, of the ball you keep and wins
right.
is not super or not as high as you might think. But ultimately, if you can get possession and push forward and play like the U.S. did in the first half against Iran, where you both dominate possession and really stress defenses, then you're in great shape. And you know, the U.S. should have had two in that first half. They were offsides by a piece of fabric on that Tim Weah scored.
Yeah, and they were really getting pushed there at the end. I actually thought, and I was surprised, that I thought the guy got pulled down in that penalty kick area.
Yeah.
There in stoppage time, and they, you know, I guess they had a chance to go look at it and with some sort of review. I want to stick with this for just one more second on,
sure.
on sort of some of the strategy. One of the things in watching it, I just think that you have to get into that third of the field because I would imagine a lot of opportunities for an actual goal come on penalty kicks. And if the ball's not in that general area, you're not going to draw that. And it just seems like there's a lot of opportunity, you know, when you're in that area to just draw a foul and have that opportunity, which is clearly, right, penalty kicks are, what's the percentage of makes? It's clearly north of 50-50.
Yeah, I think it's like 70-something. I don't remember the exact number off the top of my head.
And then what's the percentage of goals on corner kicks? I mean, that's really low, I know, but how much better of a chance does a team have to score on a corner kick versus in the regular, you know, flow of the game?
Of course, I don't have the penalty stat off the top of my head, and I do have the corner kick stat because I just read it in this book. Corner kicks are about 2.5%.
Yeah, right.
Which is way higher than any other shot. Set pieces are actually probably the biggest inefficiency in the sport. They have been kind of taken for granted by coaches for a long time that there's this thought, and some of this goes back to, you know, the cultural elements of it, right? Like, it's the beautiful game and it's supposed to be flowing and active. And this is the time that it resembles American football and we stop down and we have coordination. And frankly, some of the best teams in the world on the club side of things have actually brought in American football coaches and basketball coaches for some of their set piece work because they're like, okay, you guys know how to get people open. You guys know how to do this.
Picks with right.
100%. And we've seen that in this tournament. We've seen guys get leveled by picks in this tournament. I'm like, that's awesome. Let's go. Let's innovate. And so set pieces, obviously, though, are random. Right? It could be from 18 yards out on the right. It could be from 25 yards out on the left. It could be from 30 yards straight on. They're all over the place. It's wherever the foul happens. Corners are the same spot every time. It's the right one or the left one. And it's the same exact thing. So it is the thing that most resembles, say, a football play that, you know, you can run the plays from anywhere on the field, but you like start at a line of scrimmage and then there's some amount of yardage that you run. And then, you know, there's different combinations and whatever. In soccer, the only time that you have some kind of real space adjacent, similar timed type of thing is on a corner kick. And so they're incredibly valuable. Teams should absolutely push up into the final third and put pressure on defenses more for to try to draw set pieces, to try to one. Also, obviously, the closer you get, the easier the shot is, and get corner kicks based off of all of the available data. And yeah, you're 100% right. And
The irony of that is, as you referenced, you know, is sort of the condescension that we get sometimes in these conversations as Americans, the continuous beautiful game, and yet the most exciting opportunities. And by the way, the fans get excited. The players get excited is when the game stops for a corner kick because you've got a higher chance of actually seeing a shot on goal and perhaps even a goal. All right. So you think they've got a shot tomorrow against the Netherlands. Why?
They do. They absolutely do. And there's both like eye data and analytical data to suggest that. Even though the Netherlands won their group, that expected goal stat that I talked about earlier, they actually gave up more expected goals than they did scored. Again, the randomness of the game, small sample size, that's the kind of thing that can happen in soccer with regularity. Strategically, though, Sebastian Salazar from ESPN was on my show yesterday talking about this, the speed element of it. The Netherlands is not a very fast team. They lack team speed. The U.S. has it in drove. So
is that
the US,
unusual for them?
Yeah, a little bit. They've had a lot of players over the years that are incredibly athletic, and it's not like they completely lack it. They've got this kid, Gapko, who is Cody Gakpo, who is just ridiculous. He's was in great form for PSV, his club, and has come in and he's scored in every game of the tournament. So he obviously is a guy that they've got to contain. And they've got, you know, they've got experience. Luke De Jong is another great player. Virgil van Dijk is their captain, and he's a center back that plays for Liverpool in the Premier League and is just incredible and has been a mainstay for them for a long time. And they just haven't, you know, they've got talent. They're probably a more talented team overall, but do they have the style, you know, styles make fights. Do they have the style that can actually play with this U.S. side who is playing, kind of maximizing their talent, at least for first halves? The depth, I think, is what has killed them, where they've brought in some subs that have not performed particularly well. And, you know, then do they have the team speed if a guy like Pulisic or Weston McKennie gets out in space and starts a run to keep up? Can they get the numbers back if the U.S. can get out on the break? So that is, you know,
if they
the US,
win, it could be a matchup with Messi.
Or it should be incredible.
Which would be incredible in a quarterfinal match. All right, I know you've got to run. I've got two quick ones for you.
Yeah.
Number one is, I'm just curious, because I didn't follow this. I just saw it late last night, that Spain lost to Japan, which knocked Germany out. I mean, is there any sort of, you know, is that suspicious that maybe Spain didn't want Germany to advance?
No, I mean, those types of things have happened in the past, but it's typically been more of two teams that know that they're through with a draw play to a terrible draw. And what FIFA has done, and one of the rare bright things FIFA has done, is they had the simultaneous kickoffs. So those two games were happening at the same time. And so Spain did not necessarily
Spain didn't have to win or draw to advance.
Correct, because they had done their work previously. So actually, no, I guess if Spain, by kickoff yesterday, then Spain knew that if they lost, Germany wasn't through. But, I mean, teams aren't trying to lose at this point in the tournament because they want to stay in good form.
All right, most importantly, who do you got Sunday?
I actually think I have Washington Sunday. I like, after talking with Logan, taping the podcast, which is out as of this morning, if folks want to check it out, I think they should beat the Giants twice. Like, I know the Giants are getting a lot of guys back, and that could change the equation, but, like, it's a good matchup for Washington.
What did Logan say with respect to last week? You know, he jumped on my podcast Saturday. I love him, by the way.
He's
smart. And he said that this is the team that can run against Washington. The rest of them can't. Like, I was like, really? Like, you don't think San Francisco or perhaps Cleveland with Chubb and Watson back, or Dallas, you don't think they can run? He said, no, this is the team built, you know, with a lot of their outside zone, with a mauling offensive line, with a dual threat quarterback that's going to run it. And he was right. I mean, does he think the Giants have any chance to duplicate what Atlanta did or not?
Not really. The reason being, like, Atlanta is so good at what they do. They run outside zone, and there's nothing you can do about it. And the Giants literally throw everything at you. They run gap scheme. They run inside zone. They run outside zone. They run whatever other run plays you can possibly think of at 6:45 in the morning. Like, they are a do everything team, and they will hit a couple of them, but they don't execute at such a high level that Washington can't just blow it up with Payne and Allen and Sweat and Smith Williams and Tuhill and Chase Young. So, you know, as long as they stay disciplined and do their jobs, they should be all right. And they also figured some stuff out with the quarterback run in the second half last week. Mariota obviously killed them. They started to just say, hey, all right, you know, James is the guy in the end. James, go tackle Mariota,
like,
whether or not
he.
Yeah, exactly. And so they take that strategy to Daniel Jones. They should be all right.
Yeah. Thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, Kevin. Good to talk to you, buddy.
All right, Craig Hoffman, everybody, at Craig Hoffman on Twitter, 3 to 6, Monday through Friday, right here on the Team 980. Yeah, the matchup against the Giants is an interesting one. I will get to next hour my keys to a win over the Giants. I've got some weather information for all of you coming up next, and then Logan Thomas will join us at 7 a.m. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We are free and live on the Odyssey app. Denton and I are going to do
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the Free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
A little bit of college football Saturday, championship Saturday talk here in 2 minutes. I did want to mention that this is the show in town on sports stations anyway that will look ahead during the winter months and tell you when there is some winter weather ahead. And I appreciate the fact that many of you appreciate me doing this. This is something that I do as a hobby. I look for the next storm. Doug Kammerer, by the way, who's become a friend, and I love Doug a lot, does great job on Channel 4. He's the same way. He predicted a very, very mild and borderline snowless winter. But he wants to be wrong about his winter forecast. Well, yesterday, the Capital Weather Gang, who I love, put out a story titled, DC should brace for a cold December with chances of snow. And yeah, as you look at the forecast heading into late next week and then the weeks beyond that, it looks like for the first time in a long time, we've got a chance for a cold December. And while the Capital Weather Gang's not calling for a lot of snow, some of the extended models are showing a chance of snow next weekend and then another storm behind that as well. It's possible that we end up being 65 and sunny, because weather forecasting beyond like 7 days, really beyond like 5 days, is pretty difficult. But it does look like a lot of the major, what they call teleconnections, are indicating, you know, for those of you that like this kind of thing, wintertime, the possibility of kind of a cold and stormy December right through the holidays. Subject to change, of course. All right, tomorrow is Championship Saturday in college football. Cannot wait. I obviously have a rooting interest tomorrow. It starts tonight, by the way, with you got a Sun Belt final, first of all, between North Texas and UTSA. But the Pac-12 title tonight in Vegas, USC and Utah. USC's only loss, Denton, this year came at Utah earlier in the year by 1.43-42 in a game that, you know, basically Utah went for two and made it. I think Utah is one of the best coach teams in college football. I think Willingham's been one of the best for years. They are one of the toughest teams in college football. They don't have the firepower that they've had in recent years. They certainly don't have Caleb Williams on their team. Caleb Williams really does appear to be an absolute lock, not only to be the Heisman Trophy winner, but I'm telling you, just, you know, pencil it in right now, the 2024 NFL draft, Caleb Williams is likely going to be the number one overall pick. And next year in the NFL season, there will be a lot of tanking for Caleb talk. But I think Utah has a chance tonight. What do you think?
I definitely think they have a chance, but I like USC a lot more now than I do the first time these two teams played. I think Caleb played great the first time these two teams played.
He threw five touchdowns in that game.
I mean, he was unbelievable. But I was talking to somebody yesterday, Kevin, and I couldn't believe these words came out of my mouth, because you know how much I love Joe Burrow. So, like, comparing anybody to Joe Burrow is very high class. But the confidence level that Caleb Williams is playing with now reminds me of what Burrow was playing with in 19.
Not as good of a team, though, around him.
That's true. That's 100% true. But there's just, he believes that he can do no wrong, and then he goes out there and he does no wrong.
Utah is a team. I mean, they're 9-3 entering this Pac-12 title game, and they needed Oregon to lose to Oregon State. You know, Dan Lanning did just a horrible job for Oregon in the two losses that they finished with against Washington and Oregon State, going for fourth and ones deep in his own territory late in the game. Just idiotic. But Utah's only losses this year, 29-26, remember Labor Day weekend in the swamp against Florida. All right, Anthony Richardson had maybe the best game of the year that he had that particular night. They lost to UCLA in a shootout, and they lost a close game to Oregon, 20-17. They are very capable. They've already beaten USC. They beat Oregon State. They crushed Oregon State. They beat Washington State. They've got a chance, I think, tonight. That line is short, and the public's pounding SC. Part of me does think what you think, which is they're so good on offense, and Caleb Williams has this confident look that he's not going to let them lose. And the revenge factor, clearly, with SC after losing 43-42 on Cam Rising, the quarterback for Utah, is one tough SOB. He had a touchdown run and then had the two-point conversion run as well that gave him the win 43-42. I just think Utah is every bit as good as USC. I guess that would be, and look, the odds makers clearly feel that as well. I'm wondering, Utah travels well. Their fan base is one hell right. of a college football fan base. But I would expect in Vegas this to be borderline home field advantage for the Trojans. Don't you think tonight?
Yeah, I would say that there's going to be a lot of USC. What are they, maroon and gold is their official colorways? I don't know. I don't really care what their official, but I think there's going to be a lot of USC fans. But Utah, if they're going to win, I mean, they're going to win in the trenches. That's where their bread is buttered, and they got some grown men on both sides of the ball.
And I think they're going to be able to move the football, and that's going to be the key, moving the football and scoring and keeping up. And look, Notre Dame was moving the football, and they had two key turnovers in the second half. If not, that game may have been different last week in the Coliseum. I think SC's in trouble. By the way, the bottom line is, and we discussed this earlier in the week, you and I both believe that Georgia, Michigan, and TCU are in regardless of what happens tomorrow, unless TCU gets absolutely, bum-rushed by Kansas State. They lose that game 45-10, they could be in trouble. USC has to win to get in. Ohio State is sitting there ready to jump into the four spot if SC loses tonight to Utah. USC absolutely has to win to get in, right? We're in agreement that that's essentially the scenario tonight. SC's got to win. TCU can't get blown out. And those are the only two teams that could potentially be out based on championship weekend. The seeding could switch around. If Georgia lost to LSU and Michigan won big, you could get a switch in 1-2. If one of those two teams lost, TCU could jump up to 2 with a win, but you agree USC is the team that has to win tonight.
Yep, I agree for sure.
TCU's got a tough one. Noon tomorrow, ABC, Big 12 championship in Dallas at Jerry World. My oldest is going to that game with all of his TCU buddies. They played a hell of a game against K-State earlier in the season. They were down 28-10 in that game in the second quarter. TCU's the story of the middle portion of their season was big deficits that they rallied to come back with K-State's excellent. They're a really, really good football team. The line's 2.5. I think K-State's got a legitimate chance to win this game outright. And actually, I'm kind of picking them to win this game outright. I just hope TCU doesn't get blown out. And I don't think they will. They've improved. They're so good offensively. And the defense has gotten better. Witness what they did against Texas a few weeks ago. But I do like K-State. Who do you like?
I haven't decided who I'm going to play yet, Kevin, to be honest. I have no idea. It's exciting and also terrifying. I can't really get a feel for this. If I've asked 10 people who do they like, it's split 5 like TCU, 5 like Kansas State. I think right now I'm leaning TCU, but maybe that's just because I want them to be for sure. Like, I don't want the committee to pull any funny business. I want them in the playoff because I want new blood. But I don't. This is so tough because I watched a good majority of that game that you mentioned when they were down 18 points. The comeback was awesome, but at one point they got themselves down 18 points, and I don't know how much magic they have left if that scenario happens again or something similar, if they can dig their way out of it.
I'll tell you what, that Big 12 championship game last year between Baylor and Oklahoma State was one great football game. So hopefully you get that in Dallas tomorrow. I hope TCU doesn't get blown out. And actually, like I bet Baylor against them a few weeks ago, getting the 3. And I said, I just want TCU to win by 1 or 2. And they won on that walk-off field goal by 1. I hope that happens tomorrow. The other championship games, look, LSU now has nothing to play for, which is a shame. I wish they had beaten A&M, so this game would have mattered a lot. Georgia's a 17.5-point favorite. But you and I talked about it earlier in the week. Georgia has not been impressive recently. You know, they dominated Tennessee in the game of the year, really 1-2. But we both felt like they could have scored 40-plus, and they only scored 27. They beat Kentucky 2 weeks ago 16-6. They were actually down against Georgia Tech and only up 10-7 at halftime. I think Georgia, you know, I don't know, maybe it's that they get bored. And we'll see what happens tomorrow. But I'm tempted to take the points tomorrow with LSU.
You know, I'm almost tempted to go the other way because I think Georgia's ready to thump somebody.
Okay.
Because they've been
I could
boring.
See that. And the line's big.
It's
the
a
line
huge
is
line
big.
For a championship game. Ugh.
Yeah. Tulane UCF, by the way, in the American Athletic Championship, Tulane's had one of the most incredible seasons. Nobody saw it coming, and they're trying to avenge a loss to UCF a few weeks ago, 38-31. By the way, UCF followed up that win against Tulane with a loss to Navy. And then at night, you get the Big Ten and the ACC Championships. Michigan, a 17-point favorite over Purdue. I like Purdue. I've liked Purdue all year long because I really do like their quarterback, O'Connell. But they've struggled to score in recent weeks as well. I'd be surprised, even with Blake Corum now officially out for the rest of the year. He's going to have knee surgery, which is a shame for Michigan. I'd be very surprised if this is a competitive game.
Yeah, I think Michigan handles it. I would like to see O'Connell play well, though, because I know he's dealing with a lot of off-the-field stuff, like family tragedy, but he's going to play through it. So I would love to see him go out there and ball out. I think his team's going to lose, but if he performs well, that would make me happy.
Clemson, North Carolina in the ACC title game, just completely irrelevant through and through. Clemson, you and I have been on all year, is kind of fraudulent in watching them. Hell, they finished 10-2. They could have easily lost games against Syracuse, against Florida State, against Wake Forest. Just not a. I still can't believe he didn't bench DJ last week in that game against South Carolina. He finished 8 of 29 for 99 yards, and then Dabo had the gall after the game to say, "Nope, never even considered switching quarterbacks to the young freshman." A big mistake. Clemson would have had a chance had they beaten South Carolina. All right. Up next, Logan Thomas will join us. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980 and the Team980.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O' Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.